So before we begin, first of all, I'd like to thank the devotees for allowing me to say a little something on the Bhagavatam. It's always nice to be back here in New Dwarka. Wonderful addition of this diorama has added so much to the Kartik month meditation. Also, in following the morning announcement, some of you may have not been here, the wax. The only way to do it, I think, is to do like this, isn't it? To catch your own wax as it's dripping. Otherwise, you're going to make a big mess over here, and then they have to come with the razor blades and whatever and scratch the newly polished floor. So it's nice. You can make like an offering, isn't it? You make the offering like this.
I think we should lose the wax in
6 weeks. That's a further expansion, but assuming that we have what we have, that's fine. Okay. Okay. Narayanam namaskritya Narang chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jai mudireit. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadev, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta brahesha badreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavat yuttama shloke Bhaktim bhavati naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified by the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 16. Praise of the King Prithu by the Professional Reciters. Text number 19.
I am
true
Sakshat
Bhagavang's
Tradishnaha
Kutasta
Atma
Kalayavatirnaha
Yasmin
Avidya
Rachitam
Nirartakam
Pashyanti
Nanatvam
Api
Patitam.
Ayam tu
saksha Bhagavang's
tradisha.
Kutasta
atma
kalayavatirnaha.
Yasmin
avinya rachitam
nirartakam.
Pashyanti
nanatvam
api pratitam.
Ayam
tu sakshad
Bhagavang's
tradishah.
Kutasta
atma
kalayavatirnah.
Yasmin
avidya
rachitam
nirartakam.
Pashyanti nanatvam
api
patitam.
Ayam
tu sakshad
Bhagavang's
tradishah.
Kutasta
atma
kalayavatirnah.
Yasmin
avidya
rachitam
nirartakam.
Pashyanti
nanatvam
api patitam.
Yasmin avidya rachitam niratakam.
Ladies?
Ayam tu sakshad bhagavans tradisha. Sta atma balayavatina. Yasminna vidyavatitam niratakam. Pashyanti nana tamapi patitam. Ayam tu sakshad bhagavan tradisha. Sa atma kalayavatina. Yasminna vidyavratitam nirartakam. Pashyanti nanatvamapi patitam.
Ayam, this king, to, then, sakshat, directly, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tri Adishaha, the master of the three planetary systems, Kutastaha, without any change, Atma, the Supersoul, Kalaya, by a partial plenary expansion, Avatirnaha, descended, Yasmin, in whom, Avidyavachitam, created by nescience, Niratakam, without meaning, Pashyanti, they see, Nanatvam, material variegatedness, Api, certainly, Patitam, understood. Translation, this king is the master of the three worlds, and he is directly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is without change, and he is an incarnation of the Supreme known as a Shakyavesh avatar. Being a liberated soul and completely learned, he sees all material varieties as meaningless because their basic principle is nescience. Please repeat. This king is the master of the three worlds, and he is directly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is without change, and he is an incarnation of the Supreme, known as a Shaktyavesh avatar. Being a liberated soul and completely learned, he sees all material varieties as meaningless because their basic principle is nescience. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The reciters of these prayers are describing the transcendental qualities of Prithu Maharaj. These qualities are summarized in the words Sakshad Bhagavan. This indicates that Maharaj Prithu is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead and therefore possesses unlimited good qualities. Being an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Maharaj Prithu could not be equaled in his excellent qualities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is fully equipped with six kinds of opulences, and King Prithu was also empowered in such a way that he could display these six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full. The word kutastha, meaning without change, is also very significant. There are two kinds of living entities, nitya-mukta and nitya-baddha. A nitya-mukta never forgets his position as the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who does not forget this position and knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord is nitya-mukta. Such a nitya-mukta living entity represents the Supersoul as his expansion. As stated in the Vedas, nityo nityanam. Thus, the nitya-mukta living entity knows that he is an expansion of the Supreme Nitya, or the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being in such a position, he sees the material world with a different vision. The living entity who is nitya-baddha, or eternally conditioned, sees the material varieties as being actually different from one another. In this connection, we should remember that the embodiment of the conditioned soul is considered to be like a dress. One may dress in different ways, but a real learned man does not take dresses into consideration. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:18, Vidyavane sampane brahmane gavihastani shunichayava shrapake cha pandita samadarshinaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater or outcast. Thus, a learned man does not look upon the dresses that externally cover the living entity, but sees the pure soul within the varieties of dress, and knows very well that the varieties of dress are the creation of nescience, of vidya rachitam. Being a shaktyavesh avatar, empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prithu Maharaj did not change his spiritual position, and consequently, there was no possibility of his viewing the material world as reality. Om Ajnanata Madandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshut Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. Can someone douse this or move it far away? Because it's a little choking, the incense. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, King Prithu is the exemplar for ruling. He is Pala Shakti. It says Shaktyavesh. Shaktyavesh means empowered or invested with certain powers by the Supreme Lord. And his specific power is the Pala Shakti, or that power to protect. This is the main function of the king, or Kshatriya. Kshatriya means one who protects from harm. So that's his primary function. If he doesn't do that, he can't do anything else. But if he does that, there are also other things to do. And you've been hearing some of his other glories, how he's going to protect the Brahmins, he's going to encourage religion. He himself, as explained in his purport, can manifest the six opulences of the Lord. So he's also very attractive. He's very, very, very personally attractive in all ways. But this Pala Shakti is most important. And also maintenance. We find that when Prithu became king, the earth had dried up. It wasn't giving its essential service to the humanity, which is to provide grains and nourishment. And so Prithu chastised the earth. And eventually the earth, Bhumi, gave it back. The reason why she had stopped was because the previous king was Vena, who was very venal. Sometimes I think these names are sources of words that we have in English. I think it's true. It's like the word Ravana, very ravenous. And he would ravage so many women, right? So anyway, Vena was very venal and impossible. So they had to get rid of Vena, the Brahmins, by high-sounding words. They actually assassinated him. And from his loins, they were able to get, after Nishada was born, they were able to get Prithu and Archie. And they were, you know, the greatest of kings. This is just what they wanted, and this queen. So I wanted to, by contrast, now we've been hearing in the last few days the wonderful qualities of King Prithu, ideal. And we should remember also the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna, who would be part of the ruling group when the war was fought. And Krishna was very eager to have a pious king in the person of Yudhishthira rule the earth. So the Lord is involved in, if you will, politics. There is this internal and the external aspect of Krishna's pastimes and his instructions. On the inside, we have the wonderful Vrindavan Leela. We have the Damodar Leela, which is all attractive and by which we can personally become attracted to the Lord in so many different rasas, isn't it? This is the most endearing and blissful part of Krishna's pastimes, if you will. But there's also that external part, which is also blissful, but is involved with politics, right? And in other words, Krishna's killing all these demons. He's killing Jarasandha. He's killing Kamsa. He's working to have the Pandavas become ascendant. Here, in his aspect of Prithu, He is ruling the earth. And so this is for the benefit of everyone. Because if it, you can imagine, and we're going to read some of the qualities as described in Bhagavatam of present-day kings, what it would be like if instead of our own criminal crew who's running this world from top to bottom, we actually had pious kings. And not only kings, but governors and mayors and city council members, if they were all devotees. What a wonderful thing it would be. You know, we'd have Ratha Yatra every day. All the restaurants would be prasadam, would be govindas, right? And the taxes would be actually returned to the people for their benefit rather than stolen in so many ways. So this is described in many places in Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam deals with these subject matters in many places. And the Bhagavad Gita itself, evam parampara praptam imam rajashayo viduhu sakalena mahata yoganashtra parampara. Krishna says right in the fourth chapter that I spoke this science to Vivisvan. Vivisvan is a ruler. And he spoke it to Manu. And Manu is also setting the laws, right? So Krishna is very concerned with the rule of the earth and the planet, the universe as a whole, because that determines how the people are governed and what their consciousness is going to be. The saintly kings, the Rajarshis, understood it in this way. But due to the force of time, the science has been lost. And as Kali Yuga progresses, we find that the leaders become more and more degraded. And with the leaders, the population becomes degraded. So I'm going to read a little excerpt from the 12th canto, just describing present-day leadership, more or less. So then this is in the 12th canto, chapter 3, I believe. The land along the Sindhu River. So this is Sindhu. This is where the word Hindu came from. So this is more or less India, other places, as it speaks about Kashmir also, will be ruled by Shudras, fallen Brahmins, and meat-eaters. Having given up the path of Vedic civilization, they will have lost all spiritual strength. There will be many such uncivilized kings ruling at the same time. So we see in the previous ages, we see Prithu, he ruled the whole earth. He ruled the whole earth in this way, and therefore religion was propagated. But now we have everything is broken up into little nations, and you have all these different rulers with their little fiefdom, really. They will be all uncharitable. They will be possessed of fierce tempers and great devotees of irreligion and falsity. Just the opposite of Prithu. These barbarians, in the guise of kings, will devour the citizenry, sometimes literally. Who was that king in Uganda? Idi Amin. I think he just died recently. Literally, he's a cannibal. Will devour the citizenry, his enemies especially. Murdering innocent women, children, cows, and Brahmins, and coveting the wives and property of other men. They will be erratic in their moods, have little strength of character, and be very short-lived. Indeed, not purified by any Vedic rituals and lacking in the practice of regular principles, they will be completely covered by the modes of passion and ignorance. So this is the characteristic of kings in the Kali Yuga, or leaders in general. And it describes the character of the citizens, which I won't get into. These famous verses, how long hair, people will think long hair, men will think long hair makes them beautiful. Prabhupada liked that one, because when he came to America, he saw it in the hippies, right? Yeah, see, the Bhagavatam is confirmed. People are being harassed by their leaders. They want to leave and go to the forest. And it mentions religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, memory will all diminish day by day because of the influence of the age of Kali. And finally, at the end, by the time the age of Kali ends, the bodies of all creatures will be greatly reduced in size, and the religious principles by followers of Varnashram will be ruined. The path of Vedas will be completely forgotten in human society, and so-called religion will be mostly atheistic. The kings will mostly be thieves. The occupations of men will be stealing, lying, and needless violence, and all the social classes will be reduced to the level of Shudras. So it goes on in this vein. So we see many of these characteristics manifesting even now. And sometimes we wonder how it can be that there's another 427,000 years of Kali Yuga that we have to go through. It's very scary. And this should provide a great impetus for us to finish with our Krishna conscious business and get out. Do we really want to take birth again in the Kali Yuga to live under one of these these kings. Of course, we remember from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or sometimes we forget, but we should remember, how this whole movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began and flourished under the rulership of the Muslims, who were, you know, anything but friendly to the Vaishnavas. And so, ultimately, whatever rulership there is should not affect us in our own sadhana and prosecution of Krishna consciousness. Whatever the and we've seen in our own movement, because after all, we're in America, but the movement is all over the world. And there have been instances where devotees have been arrested and harmed and tortured even, murdered. And yet, the battle goes on for Krishna consciousness. This is not something new. We see Prahlad was tormented by his father, and the Pandavas were tormented by the sons of Dhritarashtra, and yet they remained faithful in their virtue and in their worship of Krishna. So that's an example we have to follow. So I'd like to go through a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's purport and focus on some of the ideas. So first of all, it describes that he's the master of the three worlds. So this is a special king, obviously. He's highly empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's Shaktivesh, but practically he's manifesting these six opulences. So he's virtually a plenary expansion, although he's Shaktivesh. They're describing the word Bhagavan. Now, Bhagavan normally, mostly refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we often find it used in relation to great personalities like Narada Muni, or here in relation to King Prithu. So it refers to a great soul who can be the personality of Godhead, or others who manifest the qualities of the personality of Godhead, but are not actually Vishnu Tattva. So these qualities have been described in previous verses you've been hearing. And so he could not be equaled or excelled in any of these qualities. And he used those qualities in ruling the people. The ruler should really be beloved of the people. You can just see the contrast today. You know, I think the rulership in this country has reached a new low, whether it's the presidency or the Congress, in just approval rating. And forget about Democrats and Republicans. If you read the polls, you see the people are just disgusted. You know, there's no forest where they can go to, but they're just disgusted. And, you know, the taxes and the prices and wars and the cheating and the lying and the gross immorality has just disgusted people. And they don't know where to turn. And yadyadatirati shestat tatadevetarojana. Krishna describes whatever the great man, great in the sense of great position, does, or great personality does, the common men follow. They require exemplars, as we also do. Our whole bhakti yoga principles are based on the worshipable personalities instead of these unworshipable personalities, and following in the footsteps of great souls. How many instructions do we find where we can find good examples of devotees, great devotees, who we can endeavor to emulate in our life? So the same principle is there outside also. But who are the great souls, so-called great souls? The political leaders, the sports stars, the celebrities in Hollywood. Are these people really worth emulating? And so this is a great burden on people because they have no standard upon which to act, and this great degradation comes in society. So the word kutastha, so Prabhupada goes through different words here. Kutastha, without change, is very significant. So then Prabhupada talks about nitya mukta and nitya bodha. Now, I'm not going to get into this sometimes contentious subject of nitya mukta and nitya bodha. But nitya mukta means eternally liberated, and nitya bodha means eternally bound. So we're part of the nitya bodha group, isn't it? I mean, as devotees, we're trying to become liberated, but in general, everyone here in the material world is nitya bodha, means eternally bound. But Prabhupada makes it very clear, first of all, eternally bound, well, it can't mean that forever, because some people come liberated, right? Otherwise, why should we try becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness? So that nitya is already compromised there. Nitya bodha, until you become liberated, then you're no longer nitya, you see? So generally speaking, those in the nitya-mukta category in the spiritual world, they never fall to this material world. But sometimes, occasionally, it may happen. And that's how we got here. And the nitya-buddhas, we've been bound so long, it might as well be eternal. millions of lives of Brahma being bound up by our karma, by our sinful activity, by our attachments. Therefore, it's called Nityabada. Although it did start at a certain time, it does have a beginning when we came to the material world. But in general, there's these two categories. And it's a question of forgetfulness. Prabhupada talks about that right here. One who does not forget the position as a servant of the Lord, then we remain eternally liberated. And even in this world, one can be liberated. One can even experience Goloka. One can experience one's relation with Krishna in detail, even when embodied by this dress, as Prabhupada calls it, by the material dress. This is the nature of the great devotees. Iha yasya harir dasi karmana manasa gada nikala shupyavasya avastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. So the word jivan mukta especially refers to a living entity in this world who is already liberated. So what's the criteria? Iha here means the activities. Are all within the realm of harir dasi, the service of the Lord. And now you get details. Karmana, manasa, vacha. Isn't it the senses, both active and knowledge acquiring, the mind and the voice. This is what we have, our main assets to serve Krishna. And Nikalashopyavastasu, all of them have to be engaged. If we can come to that point, that's the point of the pure devotee. You're already liberated. Liberated means one who is not does not become involved at all in the modes of material nature. Is always on that transcendental state of pure goodness, never flinching in devotional service. So that's the state that King Prita was certainly on. Prabhupada refers to the nityo nityanam. This is kind of just a little hint of the verse. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitanam eko bahu nam yova dadati kaman. Prabhupada quoted this verse often. That in the Vedas, it's in the Upanishads, and this is important, is described that of the many eternal conscious living beings, in other words, souls, there's one who is providing the means and providing the necessities of all the others. And that one, Eko Bahuna Myovada, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the living entity who is in that Nitya Mukta stage is always understanding that he's just simply part and parcel of that Supreme Personality of Godhead and eternally his servant. Nityabhada, so he sees everything in terms of spiritual relationship. Prabhupada calls vidya vinaya sampane. To see the spirit everywhere, the individual spirit and the super soul. And not make the differentiation on the basis of the dress or the body. And this is the vision of the Sankirtan devotee, isn't it? Whether the person is old or young or wealthy or not wealthy, they have their eternal relation with Krishna. And somehow or other, if we can give them a little Krishna consciousness, form of a book, the holy name, prasadam, somehow or other, this is our eternal duty, isn't it? So that's the preaching vision, really, is essential, to not make the differentiation on terms of the body. And Prabhupada did that. That's why he came to America. All the others, great devotees, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, somehow they felt that it couldn't leave India. That even though Lord Chaitanya had predicted that his name would be chanted in every town and village, that must mean, it just must mean every town and village in the Indian subcontinent. Because outside, we have the barbarians, as I've just been reading. People who are totally unqualified. Right? So what's the point of going there? But Prabhupada said, wait a minute. It says right here, one should see simply on the basis of spirit. And Lord Chaitanya himself showed by his example, by uplifting Jagai and Madhai, by exalting Haridas Thakur, who had become fallen or of fallen birth, whatever, that there is no distinction in terms of caste or any other material distinction in the prosecution of Krishna consciousness. So we have to carry forward that vision of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and all the sincere followers of Lord Chaitanya in seeing that Krishna consciousness is meant for everybody and that the urgency is there for spreading it to everybody. But the Nityabada living entity sees in terms of, this is the mode of passion vision, if you read the Bhagavad Gita, sees in terms of, who is there out there who can give me some profit? This is the vision of someone in the mode of passion. If someone is old and is weak, just discard them. If someone is young and strong, You know, either I can enjoy with them or I can profit from them. This is the different vision, the mode of passion vision given in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's Prabhupada ends the purport on that idea of not seeing according to the external dress of someone. And this was, you can see, this is necessary in a king as well, because the king has to impose justice. It was said about Lord Krishna himself and others, those great kings, that even if his son does something unjust, he will not hesitate to punish him. And if his so-called enemy is a good person, he will not hesitate to praise. See, in the position of authority, one must have that vision. He cannot be partial. This is the problem of the so-called rulers today. They're all partial. You know, they pretend to be impartial in their judgments and in their administration, but they all have their agenda. They have their loyalists. They're working for the big corporations or those who help them get elected, and so there's this partisanship that ruins the ability to rule properly. So a ruler, a kshatriya, must have this vision of vidya vinaya sampanne, of seeing the equality of everyone. And then there's all the laws. If someone obeys the laws, then, you know, then that person is benefited. And someone violates the laws, then he's punished. Otherwise, again, as described in the 12th canto, law of justice is simply that which you can buy. You know, just like you buy the judges, or you buy some fancy lawyer who can just bewilder everyone, you know, and there's really no justice. So Srila Prabhupada understood these imperatives of trying to reform society. And he wanted his little society to be influential in reforming the big society outside. And that's why he was so much enthusiastic for Varnashram Dharma, which is, of course, Daivi Varnashram, centered on the worship of the Lord, and show a countervailing principle or example to society at large, that this is how you can live peacefully, be happy, still prosper in this world, and live according to the tenets of the Bhagavad Gita and the Manu Samhita and other books of knowledge and law, so that somehow or other to reform society. And Prabhupada was eager somehow, you know, if big people, you know, VIPs could be attracted to Krishna consciousness, he was very eager for that. He wrote a letter to Gandhi, right? And I don't think he ever met with Gandhi. Indira Gandhi, I mean. But also, you know, George Harrison, we know. That's a different kind of leadership, but very powerful. Someone who has that kind of position can influence millions of people. I myself first heard the Hare Krishna mantra in that famous song, My Sweet Lord. How many of us did? You know, it may have been subliminal. I don't think I recognize it as such. But it was attractive, you know, it got me going into the somehow association of devotees. So that, you know, that popular culture can be very powerful. So this all is all part of our instruction to get from this King Prithu. Here's the ideal king, and he has all these qualities by which he's ruling. And even on a micro level, these qualities need to be there, you know, to be concerned about the spiritual welfare and also the material welfare of one's wards, one who's in charge with, one who is dependent on one. This is the real compassionate nature of a Vaishnava ruler. Whereas those who get, you know, they rule by hook or crook, who are demoniac, they simply exploit the people. They simply make it unbearable to live in such a society. And eventually they perish. Ultimately, they're slain by Kalki, who comes and just knocks off all of these demonic rulers and start again with the Satya Yuga. So it's a battle, because we're in the middle of Kali Yuga, and we're surrounded by people who have no idea about Vedic culture. We're you know, led, so-called, the local state, national government, world government to be, is run by the worst kind of demons. But even though we're in the belly of the beast, we still got to keep fighting and chanting, and ultimately the holy name will be victorious. Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. On that note, if there are any comments or questions, Archita Prabhu.
Hi, Prabhu. Thank you for a very nice class. I know how little time you had to prepare for this. On this business of Prithu being the ruler of the world, Eka Raj, I know within ISKCON, there are some ISKCON intellectuals who doubt this idea that there was ever one king ruling the entire planet. They say there's no outside evidence of this in any other history or... But it's evident from Prabhupada's books that this was so, and I don't see why it's so difficult to accept. A few verses later, it'll be explained. It's not that he was micromanaging everything around the world on a moment-to-moment basis. There were subordinate kings who were paying fealty to him, who would be in fear of him and would run their show accordingly. And even today we have that example. We have the United States, the dominant political, economic, and military power. And if some other country does something like, you know, Pakistan, Musharraf, if he does something that Bush doesn't, immediately a call comes from the White House, why did you do that? If you want more F-16s or money, you better get in line, and, you know, like that. We see how one country and one leader can exert influence all around the world. So why not 5,000 years ago or 5 million years ago or whatever?
I agree. Any other question or comment? Subhasrabhu.
So, you know, we're reading this, and of course, Bhagavatam, this is like millions of years ago. And then if we kind of try to see ourselves in present day as devotees, we're seeing that we're surrounded by demoniac influences. You know, so many crazy things, even our own relatives, our parents.
Yeah.
You know, they're of the same nature. You know, Papa, he does state that that could be innocence due to the demoniac nature of the leaders. We see so many people, they're forced to follow.
Right.
So I'm just trying to think of how should we be viewing this? In other words, should we be some type of concern? Should there be there for us, you know, as far as the society in general? Should we be freaking out because there's so few of us and we're surrounded, or, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, obviously, it's difficult in itself to be a devotee.
Yeah.
What to speak of all these other external, outside influences. So what is a devotee supposed to do? Because, you know you're trying to do something, and the deck is stacked against you. So why don't we just run to the forest and just forget about this stuff and just hope we die?
Well, okay, that's a good question. this question is not new in ISKCON. I remember even in Prabhupada's day in the 70s, there was a definite... Was it that California was going to fall into the ocean? I think it was something like that. It was a certainty. You know, there was no question. We had the readings, we had the astrology, we had the readers, you know. And some devotees actually left L.A. and they went inland, you know. They also asked Prabhupada about World War III, which some of you may not remember, who are younger, but the whole Cold War was a period of high anxiety. All these bombs, you know, in the hands of the Soviet Union and in America, and we were always jockeying for position, and we had various friction points with Vietnam or Cuba or Berlin. You know, there was always something happening that could blow up into World War III. And so I remember this phrase, the sword of Damocles. You know, there's like this sword hanging over your head with by a little thread. It doesn't make for a very relaxed kind of, you know, you can't kind of kick back with that happening. You know, you kind of look up there and say, well, okay, what to do? So this movement was actually started and nourished for, you know, 12 years in that atmosphere. And there's only a certain amount that we can do to respond to that. In other words, we have a mission that Prabhupada showed by his example. And, you know, following in so many footsteps of great examples like Prahlad. Prahlad often, for me, seems like, you know, Prabhupada's model almost, you know. Those verses where he says, I could just stay anywhere and chant your glories and be happy, but I'm feeling for the people who are in Maya Sukhaya. So, in another way, Prabhupada is also like that. In many ways. And one is to be very tolerant and to not accommodate in the slightest bit the demoniac rulership in the form of his father, to speak truth to power. This was Prahlad's, you know, kind of emblem. You make a T-shirt, you know, speak truth to power. That characterizes Prahlad. And that's very courageous. And Prabhupada didn't flinch. You know, he went to the UN, you know, when he had some public forum like the reporters or just in his books. He did not flinch, and he did not, he wanted the rural communities, but primarily he wanted devotees to preach in the cities. This was the Prahlad's mood. This was Bhaktisiddhanta's mood. When he came out of Mayapur and he went to Calcutta, even though his Guru Dev would never go there, you know, Gaurakishoredas Babaji. So anyway, the thing is, we should be aware of the, you know, of the winds of change that are going on. But we have our mission, we have our institution, which has been built up a great effort. You know, this temple and the books and the websites and every way to which we're reaching and trying to change. And that's all we can do. You know, Prahlad just gave his father instruction. I don't know if he thought he was going to be, you know, changed by it, but he gave it anyway. And then come what may, that's it. And so really our profile should be to be as strong a Krishna conscious as possible, to try to influence as many people as possible. If you can influence the hierarchy that's actually ruling, all the better. If not, then the lumpen, you know, the masses, you know, they eventually make the change anyway. And go on preaching even in the face of these forces that look like they're about to destroy the world. There's nothing else to do. I mean, what did Draupadi do? You know, you just throw up your hands. You pray hard. You rely on Krishna. This is one of the principles of surrender. Rikshashatiti vishvaso goptatve vananantata. To be sure that Krishna will protect and maintain. So, you know, that example is a very real life example. And to leave the preaching field and just to try to find some personal safety is definitely not the example Prabhupada showed. And you'll find yourself in more anxiety. Because you'll lose the association of devotees. You lose the mercy of the Lord, you know, to try to find some, there's no place. There's no place in this world that's safe. There is no place. You know, if they do it, keep doing what they're doing, if they have a war, the radioactive fallout will go everywhere. It's hopeless. The only hope is to change the consciousness of the people and change the consciousness of the leaders and to rely on Krishna to protect. It's it's an important question because as the winds of war keep blowing so loudly, you know, it's hard to see how, you know, the world will survive. But only Krishna can make the change that's going to protect this world. So that's my answer, is that keep doing what you're doing, but pray hard, really hard, that we can go on with our Krishna consciousness and that Krishna will prevail. Hare Krishna. What should we do? Anyone else in the back there? One more.
Are there some practical efforts that can be made on the part of all the devotees in utilizing the intelligence that Krishna has given us to make preparations, just like Prabhupada, in the example of where Prabhupada said start farms?
Yeah. Well, that should be there. I remember for Y2K I prepared. I had two huge jugs of water. Just in case. That was the only preparation I made. That was a good bet. I didn't buy a lot of land. I didn't put away, 200 tons of grain, you know, and bury it somewhere. So that worked out. But I agree that there should be something, especially in the farms, which Prabhupada wanted, where we can have some refuge. All glory to Prabhupada.